The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with Get Reading for January the 16th. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm joined, as always, by Get Reading's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, hello.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. Bit chilly outside, been to the gym, got all my errands done. Now sitting down to talk some Reading.
Very nice. Well, I've been at John Lewis, so I think you've probably had a more fun day than I have.
No, John Lewis in the sales or down the gym? It's a toss-up.
Baby shopping, so it wasn't sales. I wasn't having any fun.
Oh, even worse. Okay, I think you might take this one. But I think both were probably a little bit more fun than Reading's last result, that 0-0 draw with Middlesbrough. Not that it was the worst 0-0 I've ever seen, but it wasn't a game of high drama, was it?
It wasn't, no. I wouldn't say as fun as a result, probably not as fun as the performance, because the performance wasn't great and the match wasn't great. But I thought overall the result against a very good Middlesbrough team was pretty decent, you know. 0-0, I think you sort of wind the clock back 5 or 6 weeks ago and there was no way Reading were going to get anything out of that game. But they have, it sort of showed the improvement that Steve Clarke continues to make, making them tough to beat and solid at the back. And they were, I mean, Middlesbrough did get through them a few times, and when they did that, they found Adam Federici in fantastic form. But all in all, I thought it was a decent point, and Reading improved in the second half. First half, they were bad. They didn't sort of get forward at all and cause Middlesbrough any problems. But second half, they improved, and I thought in the end it was a decent point.
Yeah, to me, Reading at the moment are very much setting up like an away side. I mean, our stats desk did a little piece on tarlhurstend.com showing how the amount of touches that Simon Cox and Jamie Mackie in the first half were minimal. And they were very much that was their game plan, sit back and try and hit them on the break. But you're right, it wasn't really clicking in the first half. But second half, they got forward. But again, not too many great chances. I mean, I happened to miss the Norwich game the other week, so that's been 4 Reading games now that I haven't seen Reading score a goal. So I think I might be the anti-you. You don't see Reading win away. I just destined not to see them win at home.
Yeah, no, they didn't create much. I think any chances that did come in the second half again sort of came from set plays, didn't they, or crosses into the box. And I think Alex Pearce missed one, kind of missed one. It was from a Norwood free kick, I think. He missed his header. And when the ball was in the air, I thought he was going to get to it, but he just missed it. And then there was a little bit of a scramble. And Pogge had a chance from a free kick, which he headed over quite early in the second half. But other than that, yeah, I mean, they weren't cutting through Middlesbrough at will. But then you've got to remember, Middlesbrough are have got the best defensive record in the league. They've only conceded 17 goals this year. So, you know, they're mightily impressive at the back, just as they are going forward. So it weren't the worst point. I mean, I think when Steve Clarke came in, when you come in on the back of a 6-1 defeat and a team that's shipping, on average, pretty much 3 goals a game, the main thing there as a new manager, you look at that and think, right, we've got to stop that. That's the main thing. We have to improve at the back. And he's done that, and now it's all about improving going forward, isn't it? You've got to keep the improvement at the back, keep it tight, but you want to see building blocks now as the next sort of month goes by, don't you? You maybe want to see a little bit more expansive play going forward. I think it's going to help getting Gareth McCleary back when he's in the side, because they desperately lack a little bit of pace and just a little bit of spark going forward, don't they? I think once you've got McCleary back in that side, it gives you an extra dimension, and which they're lacking a little bit at the moment. So hopefully if he makes it for tomorrow, then we might see a slightly more improved performance, certainly in an attacking sense. But if he doesn't, then maybe we'll see another kind of Huddersfield away game where, you know, they'll try and keep things tight, don't give much away, and then if a chance comes, try and take it and return home with 3 points.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting, you know, you mentioned sort of the strikers and getting McCleary back. I mean, do you think at the moment the problem lies with those in midfield creating the chances, or is it up front? Is it with the actual strikers? Because, and we'll come on to the transfer rumours in just a second, but a lot of fans are desperate to see a new striker arrive at the club. But my argument was, you could have the best striker in the world, but, you know, they're not getting a great deal of chances. So for me, that midfield needs to be doing more to actually create something for the front men.
I think they do, but again, for me, the most important thing, and I've been banging on about this for a good old year for Reading now, is that link between midfield and attack, or that link player between midfield and attack, which Reading desperately miss. I mean, you've got Norwood and Williams at the moment as the two central midfielders. They're not the best going forward. I think we know that. They can, you know, I think Williams got a few goals last year. Certainly when he was at his peak, when he was in full force, he was a kind of box-to-box midfielder. You think back to his goal at the Valley.
He had a QPR as well, didn't he?
Yes, exactly. And you know, he did get up and support the attack when he could. He's slowly getting back to his best. He's not at his best yet. I think that's pretty obvious. But he's beginning to show signs that he's getting there. Oliver Norwood should be scoring more for me, but just hasn't hasn't done so yet. He's, you know, he's, when he's got the sort of technique that Norwood has, he should be scoring more. But he's never going to get you 10 goals a season. For me, that number 10, that playmaker, is what Reading have been massively lacking, that link play. And until they find someone, I think they're always going to struggle to create for the forwards because the midfield are just a little bit too deep. And I think Cox is playing there at the moment, but, you know, and I like Simon Cox. He's a very good player, and I think he's done well since he's arrived here. But is he a number 10? It's certainly not what I consider an out-and-out number 10 who can be the link between midfield and attack. And I think Reading lack that. And until they find that sort of player, then I think they're never going to be a side that scores bucket loads of goals.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's interesting. Again, you bring up Cox. I was asked a question by a Fulham blog for a preview this week. Oh, Simon Cox is, you know, one of your top goal scorers. He's going to be the one to watch. And I was like, well, I'm still not sure what Simon Cox's best position is. Maybe you know what it is. But for me, he's not quite a striker. He's not a winger. As you said, he's not really doing so well in the number 10 slot. And maybe that's why he's never really settled down at a club. Because for me, I watch him and I'm thinking, where is his best position? Where do Reading get him in the team?
Well, I mean, maybe his best position is a striker, but in a straight 4-4-2, when you're playing off someone, but you're still either at the top. He's certainly not a number. If you're playing one up front, like kind of Reading do, like Glenn Murray has been doing, he can't do that job for me. He was in that position against Huddersfield in the FA Cup tie, and it was just clear in the first 45 minutes. He can't play with his back to goal against two powerful defenders and, you know, bring balls down and bring players into play. It was just bouncing off him, and so the midfield would never get anywhere near him. And that's why Reading were, you know, just had no efforts on goal in that opening 45 minutes. But I think if you were playing the old school 4-4-2, I think that would be his best position up front, off for Glenn Murray. But I don't like I said, I don't see him as a number 10. He's certainly not a winger for me, and that is a problem with Cox, I suppose. And maybe it is why he hasn't sort of really kicked on and forged himself a real role in one of the clubs he's played for, because he doesn't really have an out and out position. There's a few players in football that are like that. But I'm not having a go at Simon Cox too. I do think
no, not at all. He gives everything.
He certainly does, and he's had a good season. I mean, you know, he's a top goal scorer, joint top goal scorer, I think, with Murray. But and so he has had a decent season. He's tailed off a little bit at the moment, but he's playing deep at the moment, isn't he? So maybe that's why the goals aren't coming.
Well, Reading have been linked with a few different strikers this week. We'll go through the transfer rumours in order that they sort of appeared on the internet. They said you can go and check either Get Reading or thetalesson.com to read up on the stories and where they came from. But regardless, the first was Nicky Maynard, Cardiff striker, very much out of favour and expected to leave that club. He was linked with Reading at the start of this week. Was there any truth to the Nicky Maynard rumours?
I don't think so. I thought that was someone that put sort of two and two together and went with that one. I'm not too sure. That one was strange. It came out just after a big conversation that myself and a lot of Reading fans were having on Twitter after the game last weekend, and Maynard came up, and then within a couple of hours this rumour had sort of started on one of I think it was Football League World, wasn't it? I'm not too sure. I mean, to be honest, he's probably a striker that Reading have looked at and thought about what is sort of maybe not gone as far as asking Cardiff what his position is, but I mean, he's not getting a game at Cardiff, is he? I'm sure there's an awful lot of Championship clubs that have probably thought about him and looked at him and wondered if Cardiff are going to let him go. Should we take a punt on him? Because he had a decent record at Bristol City, but I'm not entirely convinced that there was any legs in that. And I've certainly not. I'm categorically told as well that there's certainly not a bid being made, which was reported last week when this all started. So I'd take that one very much with a pinch of salt, I think. Okay. But you never know. Like I said, I imagine his name may well have been brought up and been on a list, but I don't think that'd just be ready. I think that'd be an awful lot of clubs that are looking for a striker, but just because he's not getting any game time at Cardiff.
Yeah, it's a believable one. I mean, the circumstances fit Reading's sort of needs. Player not long left on his contract, a club desperate to get rid, and someone that's probably not going to cost in the world. So you can see where the links come from. But another one, sort of at the other end of the scale, a striker that's new to the game and developing is Manchester United's Will Keane. You might remember him from loan spells at QPR and what was the other one? Wigan?
Yes.
Wigan the other one? Yeah.
I think it
so
was.
He was linked again with a move to Reading. Apparently Louis van Gaal wanted to keep him in the summer with an eye that he would push the likes of Falcao, Van Persie and Rooney. But he's fallen behind James Wilson, and now it's looking likely that he'll be allowed to leave Old Trafford on loan. Reading and Blackpool were reportedly the two names in the frame. Any truth to this one at all?
This one, I think there could well be a little bit of interest in this one. I think he's certainly someone that the club have considered, and they are looking at loan options. And I think Will Keane has certainly got a few more legs to it than Nicky Maynard. And again, I don't think Wren are the only club that are sort of keeping abreast of his situation at Manchester United. I think it's pretty keen. I think United are pretty keen to put him out on loan. And
no pun intended.
Yeah, and an awful lot of Championship clubs are going to be looking at him. And Reading, I do believe, do have an interest in him. Whether they can get it done or they sort of push it further and try and get it done, I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's certainly one to keep an eye on in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, my only reservations with Keane is that he's not scored a professional goal in football.
No.
He's 22. I know he had a serious injury a couple of years ago that really set him back. Some Manchester United fans, again, that we've been talking to over Twitter, have been sort of saying, yeah, he was a bright prospect, but he's, again, not kicked on since that injury. But again, I mean, Charles, where do you stand on type of loans like this, where you take a young Premier League player and you give them, say, 6 months or a season? Because for me, I always think, unless they're a player that's going to push you over the edge, why spend your time developing someone else's player?
Yeah. I mean, it is a conversation piece, isn't it? Because, I mean, but then you look at, sometimes they are success stories, aren't they? Look at Patrick Bamford. I mean, look at him last weekend, by far and away the best player on the pitch. And I think a lot of that stemmed from his spell with Derby last season, and he really grew into the player that he's becoming now. And it can work. If you get a special player, it can work. But obviously, someone like Will Keane, like you said, he hasn't scored a professional goal. It's not one that's going to get the pulses racing, is it? And is he going to be the person that really kickstarts Reading season and fires them to a successful second part of the campaign? I'm not too sure. And like you said, is it really worth the time and effort of trying to get him to progress when he's not even your player? It's one for the fans to discuss. But if he comes in and he scores six or seven goals, maybe, you know, eight goals, then it's proved to be a success. But I think the fact with Reading is, now for me, Reading aren't going to get promoted this year. They're not going to, well, unless something remarkable happens and these words come back to haunt me, I don't think they're going to challenge for a playoff spot or anything like that. And so I suppose you can kind of play around with the second half of the season, as long as you don't get dragged firmly into a relegation battle. It's looking at the squad now and the fact that Steve Clark's in, I can't see that either. So you can have a bit of fun with the second half of the season. And if that means getting a lad in who suddenly, you know, causes defensive problems and lands you a few goals, then so be it. And who knows, it could also lead to a permanent move. So it's worth looking at. I don't really have a problem with the system and how it works. It just depends, as long as it's a player that is worth it, and you don't just take someone for 6 months, cover their wages, and they play about four games off the bench.
Absolutely not. Well, again, we flip-flop from a young and experienced to a man that's proven at the very highest level. Stoke's defender Robert Huth, capped by Germany, a mainstay in the Premier League for a number of years until, again, a serious injury sort of derailed him about 14 months ago. Stoke have confirmed that they're looking to get him out on loan, and Reading are one of the teams that have been mentioned and linked with Huth's signature on a loan deal. Any truth to this one? Can you see this one happening?
I don't think so. Again, I thought this was an easy link. We asked Steve Clark about it yesterday, but I tell you what, we're not going to get anything from Steve Clark in terms of transfers. If we thought Nigel Adkins was a bit of a stonewaller, he's got nothing on Steve Clark. I tell you, he shoots you down within a second of trying to get anything out of him in terms of transfers. And again, honestly, Robert Huth, is this a sort of person that Reading need for 6 months? I don't even know what wages he's on, but they will be an awful lot. And we're not old, but he's aging. He's not played much football. Is he really the person that Reading need right now?
We've already got one of those on the books as it is.
Exactly. Who might well be, you know, touched with, he's back training and might be available within a sort of week or so. I really don't know. I mean, you know, that's just me saying it. But for me, that's one that Reading shouldn't be going anywhere near, in my opinion. He's decent, very good player, but you know, do Reading need him? Is that what the club needs to be about for the next 6 months? I'm not sure.
No, absolutely agreed on that one. Well, you mentioned Anton Fernand on the injury front. So is that, you reckon he could be back in training within a week or so?
Well, no, he's back training. He's trained back yesterday.
Training. Yeah, oh,
he trained yesterday, and I'm not quite sure quite. Steve Clark wasn't in the best mood with me, I don't think, yesterday, because he said he was back training, and I asked him if he had a chance of playing tomorrow, and he labelled it a stupid question. I didn't quite understand. And then he explained no, went into further detail, saying no, we take our time with him, blah,
well,
blah,
they
blah.
did seem to take the time with Pavel Pogrebniak, who went from, oh, he's just joining in with training, to, oh, he's in the starting lineup on Saturday.
I couldn't believe it when he was in the starting lineup Saturday. It was an absolute bolt from the blue, again, considering what Steve Clarke said a couple of days before. So who knows? But yeah, unless he was completely pulling a fast one, he's certainly not going to be involved on tomorrow, Ferdinand. But he is back training, and touch wood, we might see him back in the team. The only problem with seeing him back in the team, the last two times we've seen him in the team, he lasted 45 minutes and then a minute, and we haven't seen him since. So
we did win both games.
Did win both games, indeed. And that whole minute that you played at the end of Carrow Road was obviously key to that. It'd be good to see him back and see him playing. I think we all saw in that 45 minutes he did play at the Madstad that he's a good defender and he would do well for Reading, but I think there's a very, very big question mark over his fitness and how he can stay fit. So I think that's, we'll have to wait and see over the second half of the season. But certainly positive signs, and we could be seeing him back playing again soon.
What about Gareth McLeary? He missed, obviously, the 0-0 draw with Middlesbrough. Could he be involved tomorrow?
Yeah, well, Clark said he hopes he's involved. He did say last week he hopes he was going to be involved as well, but he said he's more hopeful this week that he'll be involved. I saw McLeary driving out the training ground yesterday. Beeped his horn at me as he was driving past and was smiling away, and so hopefully he'll be fine for tomorrow. I think we would all love to see him back. I think he just gives it red, as I mentioned earlier, he gives Red an extra dimension. So touch wood, he'll be involved.
Yeah, and one player who definitely won't be involved because he's now left the football club is Sean Cummins, leaving for Millwall this week for always fun undisclosed fee. From my personal point of view, a deal that very much made sense. I have absolutely nothing against Sean Cummings. I think he's a good fullback, but if someone's coming in with money for him and you get a chance to save best part of probably about a quarter of a million's worth of wages, I think it was a move that made sense for all parties, and he needed to be playing football at his age. But any thoughts on Cummings' departure?
Well, I completely agree with what you just said. I thought it just had to be done, really. He was going to be leaving in the summer anyway on a free. He suddenly got a club coming offering transfer fee and to take his wages off for the next 6 months, then you've got two experienced international players in his position already, then, you know, it's just absolute given. Like you said, top bloke, really like Sean Cummins. I think we all enjoyed his goal up at Wigan on the opening day of the season, and he goes with everyone's best wishes. Steve Clarke said exactly that yesterday. It was just a deal that was good for all parties, and he felt it was right to let Sean go. And so, yeah, no, absolutely right decision from Reading, in my opinion, to accept that one.
Yeah, absolutely, and best of luck to Sean Cummings, except when, obviously, when Millwall face Reading in a couple of weeks' time.
Did he play against Bradford, actually? I didn't look at their team. Did he?
No, I haven't seen either. I presume he was eligible, but I don't know if the deal got done in time.
Yeah, because he didn't play for Reading at Huddersfield, did he? And so he wouldn't have been cup side.
No, I'm not really sure about that. I'll quickly look that one up.
Rude awakening for him at Valley Parade.
Yeah, not the best one there. But tomorrow we do head down to Craven Cottage to face Fulham, a team that we comprehensively beat earlier in the season. What was probably one of the best wins of the Nigel Adkins era, and sadly it was all downhill after that. But a 3-0 win that day against the Felix Magat side. I don't think Kit Simon's side are going to be quite so accommodating tomorrow.
No, and I don't think they probably won't go down to 10 men as early as they did at the Madstad. That was one of the games I missed, actually. That was when my baby was arriving, so I wasn't at that one. But yeah, like you said, very good. It was Glenn Murray's debut, wasn't it? He got a couple of goals and fantastic performance. So no, I'm certainly not expecting it to be anywhere near as easy as it. It's a different Fulham side now. They're still shipping an awful lot of goals. I think they're one of the only two teams, them and Huddersfield, have conceded more than Reading this season in the Championship. So maybe that suggests we could be in for a bit of a thriller and a bit of a goal fest tomorrow. It's a tough one to call, really. I think I do fancy Reading, I've got to say. I do fancy Reading to go out there and get a win. I think they're, like I said, they're showing signs of how solid they are now, and I fancy them to get a couple of goals tomorrow. So the midfield battle's key for me. Again, I think Norwood and Williams, they can control that central midfield against, you know, experienced player like Scotty Parker, and I think they've got Ryan Tunnicliffe and people like that. If Reading can get on top in that central midfield battle, with the amount of goals Fulham concede, I just fancy Reading to take this one.
Okay, money where your mouth is time. It's got some gap now between yourself and Johnny at the top of the prediction league. He's 5 points ahead of you. You're third, 2 points behind myself. and 2 points ahead of Westie at the bottom. So I'll read out the predictions. You can catch them on the main edition of the Tyler Sten podcast, which you can get now. Subscribe to the show in iTunes. Get the cheap plug in there now. I predicted a 2-1 win for Fulham to avoid any of our standard we'll all predict a positive result syndrome. Johnny predicted a 1-1 draw, and Westie went for a 1-0 win. So what say you, Charles?
2-1 win.
You're going to go for a 2-1 Reading win.
When you started that, I thought I was second then. You were saying, oh, you're only 4 points off top spot. And no, by the time you'd finished, I'm virtually in a relegation zone.
Yeah,
you're looking over my shoulder rather than looking above me.
Well, unfortunately, you're on a bit of a low streak. You've got one out of the last seven results right. So it's, you know, I'm riding three successful positive results that drags me back towards Johnny. But,
did you have 0-0 last week?
I had 1-1 last week.
1-1, all right.
Yeah. So I predicted the draw. I think
Reading win for me. Biggest away support since the Arsenal game in the Premier League, I think it is. And I think completely sold out. Nearly 3,000 going to be there. And who knows what if more tickets have been snapped up in the old neutral zone next to it. So it's going to be a cracking atmosphere for all the Reading fans going down there. Let's just hope it's a slightly more enjoyable journey than last time we went to West London earlier in the season and at Griffin Park, but I think it will be.
Yeah, and hopefully how Robson Kanu can recapture that form that he showed at Fulham in the Premier League, where we all thought, wow, what a player.
I was just writing something about that game actually before I came up here to make this call. I was talking to Jem about that match, and obviously it was his only Premier League goal, and it's special memories for him, so I'll be whacking something online about that later.
Well, again, you can head over to talisson.com and read a Fulham fan's perspective, and how Robson Kanu was the player that they were worried about, because he's had a blinding couple of games. He scored the equaliser, I think, in the 3-3 draw at the Medeski that same season, and then obviously scored two in the Reading's 4-2 win, so he terrorises Fulham.
That's what that was, 3-3 he's got against them. Yeah. So yeah, he's a hopefully he can continue that tomorrow and break out, score his first goal from open play. Actually, it was a penalty, wasn't it, this goal he scored this season? So waiting for his first from open play.
Well, as we've mentioned a few times on this show, the Reading Post is alas no more. The Get Reading website continues, however, Charles. And what can we expect to see on there over the next few days?
Well, obviously, it's all dominated by the match now. Over the next few days, we've got all the rest of the previews to go up today, all the obviously live blog tomorrow, all the reaction opinion piece on Sunday about what we've seen, probably five things that I've learned from the match, and then as we progress through the week we'll start finish the sort of looking back on Fulham and start previewing what should be a very big and exciting FA Cup game on the following weekend. And I've got a bit of a special interview coming up for that Cardiff game actually next week, hopefully, touch wood, it comes through, which will be quite an interesting one, looking back on sort of an old match against Cardiff, so that'll be interesting. But I think there's going to be a big away support going down to that one as well, jumping down the M4. So
yeah, you want to
a couple of really good away followings.
You want to ask Nick Hammond about playing Cardiff in the cup. Well, Nick Hammond's greatest moments as a Reading goalkeeper saving.
You just completely nicked my
no.
I'm trying to keep quiet.
No. I mean, you don't want to speak to Nick Hammond. Speak to Dean Hammond.
No,
okay,
it is going to be Nick Hammond. So yeah, we'll be talking to Nick Hammond about not the stuff he does off the pitch, which he's known for now, but the stuff he does on the pitch, and a special memory for him, and a special memory for Reading fans, that whole game and time, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the last great cup memories we have at Elm Park. So sorry about that one. But oh well. And I can think of no better note to end it on. Obviously, head over to thetylersden.com. We've got plenty of fan opinion and analysis. A couple of new things as well we're trialing out. If you haven't checked it out already, check out our bus top tour of Reading, which gives you one fan's view of Reading's landmarks. We've also got a look at who Reading's most valuable player is. Off the top of your head, Charles, who do you think Reading's most valuable player is right now?
What's that? In terms of monetary value?
Well, if you were building the club from scratch and you say you can only keep one player, who would it be?
Oh, jeez.
To help you out, I was torn between Jordan Obita and Gareth McCleary.
Yeah, see, McCleary's the guy I've got in my head at the moment. I would probably go with McCleary.
Okay,
which is why I'm guessing he's the only person they've given a new contract to.
Wouldn't surprise me. Well, I said head over to telesn.com to check them out. We'll be back with the main edition of the podcast on Monday. As I said, you can subscribe on iTunes to get both these shows. And hopefully, Charles, we'll sit down and chat ahead of that FA Cup tie.
Yes, indeed.
Brilliant. Well, everyone have a great week, and take care, Charles, and take care, everyone else.
Yes, speak to you later. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.